Robert Stinnett served in the U.S. Navy from 1942 to 1946, where he earned 10 battle stars and a presidential unit citation. He worked as a journalist and a photographer for the Oakland Tribune and is a consultant on the Pacific War for the BBC and for the ASHI and NHK television networks in Japan. In 1986, he resigned his position at the Tribune to devote himself full-time through the extensive and painstaking research necessary through the Freedom of Information Act to produce his book, Day of Deceit. He is the author of the book, George Bush, His World War II Years, having served under George Bush during World War II. He's our guest today, this special day on Coast to Coast AM. Robert, how are you, sir?
Doing fine, thank you.
Good. I spent my time in the Navy as well, and I, too, was a journalist in the Navy, a 1655 designator for me. I don't know what they had them in your day.
Yes, that's first I've heard that. Right.
Let's talk, Robert, about Pearl Harbor, if we can. In episode, of course, as I will play later on tonight, A Day That Will Live in Infamy, this attack... Was it a surprise attack, Robert? Because there have been all kinds of questions about that.
Well, that's what my book is about. President Roosevelt in October 1940, this was a year before Pearl Harbor, adopted a Navy plan to get Japan to attack the Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor. And the plan called for aiming 8 provocations at Japan to get them to do this. The whole idea was a back approach to get the United States into war with Germany. Because at that time, in October 1940, Hitler had conquered most of Europe, was bombing England and London, and he was massing invasion forces on the French coast. He was going to seize England, merge the British fleet with the Nazi Navy, come over here, and do what, who knows, to Canada, Bermuda, and the British Isles in the Caribbean and South America. The United States was in great peril at that time, and the president and his military staff wanted to go against Hitler, but the United States citizens, 80% of them, wanted nothing to do with Europe's war. So that's why he worked on a treaty that Japan, Italy, and Germany had signed in September 1940, and it called for if any one of the three nations got involved in a state of war, that's the key phrase here, state of war with a country not then in the war, meaning the United States, mm-hmm. then they would come to one another's aid.
Now, Robert, weren't they taking a chance on two fronts? First of all, did they expect the amount of damage, 21 U.S. ships sunk or damaged and 2,400 Americans dead, did they expect that during the attack?
The attack did cause 2,500 lives in Hawaii, and there were also another 1,000 in Guam and Wake and into the Philippines, even more. But the plan did not account for the lucky shot that the Japanese had on the USS Arizona. A bomb went down the one of the stacks and ignited the magazine and blew up the ship. And that caused about 1,100 deaths.
Oh, just right in that episode alone. That's right. That was the big one and the tragedy. But then they didn't expect that. What they didn't expect to lose almost their entire Pacific Fleet, right?
Well, they didn't. The president and his naval officers had ordered all of the modern ships, including our aircraft carriers, out of Pearl Harbor. They were not in there. All that was left in there were the relics of World War I, the old battleships that could only go about 18 knots. And to keep up with carriers, you've got to go 36 knots. So what was really left and what the Japanese attacked were the old World War One battleships.
Which we weren't going to use anyway, right?
Well, they could not keep up with carriers. They were remodeled for use in the Pacific War, but they were more of a support just bombarding Japanese islands.
Our concern then would have been with Japan for the attack. weren't they also taking a chance that the Americans still would have simply said, okay, we understand you got to go to war with Japan, but we haven't been attacked yet by Germany. Let's leave that front out of it. Was that a possibility?
Not to this Navy plan. The plan was really based on the racism that we had in this country at the time about the sneaky Japs. That was pervasive throughout the country. And these eight provocations were aimed at the Japanese, including sending U.S. cruisers into Japanese territorial waters. We cut off their access to oil and the natural resources of Southeast Asia. They had no other place to go but to send invasion forces down to Southeast Asia and then knock out the Pacific Fleet so not to interfere with the Southeast Asia invasion.
Always have been talk, Robert, that we broke the Japanese naval code. Is that true?
Yes. Our Navy cryptographers, they were stationed in the Pacific in 25 monitor stations. And these were the brilliant cryptographers that could intercept the Japanese naval messages, decode them, and also translate them, and then send them to Washington, D.C. But the messages did not get to the Hawaiian commanders. They got to the Philippine commanders, who were General MacArthur and Admiral Hart. But the Hawaiian commanders, Admiral Kimmel and General Short, were not given the information because they did not because Washington did not want the Hawaiian commanders to interfere with the overt act of war. That's what the plan called for. The Japan conduct an overt act of war against the Pacific Fleet in Hawaii.
If we had not, in your opinion, pushed Japan, would they ever have attacked?
Japan wanted peace during 1941 and could not get President Roosevelt and his advisors to go for that because, you see, they had adopted this plan in October 1940. They wanted Japan to attack us and arouse the American public to end this isolation movement that was pervasive throughout the country. We wanted nothing to do with Europe's war. That's what it was called, not World War II at that time.
Now, in Hitler's particular case, had we not entered the war when we did, Robert, against Germany, what would have happened, in your opinion?
As I said earlier, the German army and navy were prepared to invade England and seize the British fleet and merge it with the Nazi navy and continue their conquest of North America and South America.
Do you think eventually they would have tried to come onto our own mainland here?
That was the plan was to go against the British. Whether or not they would have come to the United States, I don't know. But some authors have suggested that we'd be speaking German today if this all had not happened.
How many people were in on this, knowing that Japan was going to attack Pearl Harbor at the time?
Well, there were in the Pacific, there were at least 200 Navy cryptographers, another 200 were in Washington, D.C., so at least 400 people had some knowledge of this and really condoned it. They thought this was the best way to get us into the war against Hitler, because Hitler was the real enemy, not Japan.
400 people, though, Robert, in the know on this, and it really didn't leak out? That's incredible.
Well, the cryptographers were sworn to secrecy under penalty that they would lose all of their benefits. They could even be jailed for revealing national defense secrets. So that was all kept quiet. And when the war ended, all these records that substantiated all of this information were locked in naval vaults and were not introduced into any of the nine investigations conducted about Pearl Harbor.
Now, prior to December 7, 1941, as you said, 80% of the Americans really were opposed to any kind of conflict with Germany. Why was it so high?
The leader of the movement, the ice-based movement, was Charles Lindbergh, who was at the time America's greatest hero. He's the one that flew mm-hmm. nonstop across the Atlantic from New York to Paris. And joining him was Henry Ford, the auto magnate, the Hearst newspapers, the Catholic priest Father Coughlin. And you see, the American parents had it with Europe's war in World War One, where our soldiers were gassed and did not pay their debts. So they wanted nothing to do with Europe at this time. And it was the height of the Depression also.
I have always heard stories, Robert, that the Germans had gotten fuel from their U-boats that were parked off the coast of New Jersey by some of the oil companies. Is this true? Did they have that kind of relationship with some of these companies?
My book is really about the Pacific War, and so I have not gone into the Atlantic War. But Germany in 1940 and 41, and in those years, they had access to all the oil there in Romania and in Europe. So that was not a problem for them.
Well, truly, this was an incredible situation, because I guess had we not entered when we did and started the nuclear battle that ended the war, in Japan at least, Hitler probably would have had the atomic weapon before us, Robert, and God knows what he would have done with it.
Well, he was working on them, and as you know, he had working on the V-2 delivery systems that were the forerunners of missile bombs, you know, that were aimed at England, and it caused a huge amount of damage towards the end of the war.
Well, we did what we had to do, and even though then in this particular case, this was basically provoked in order to get our involvement. Do you agree with that? Do you think that's what we should have done at that time?
I think that was the only option that the president and his military advisors had, was to we had to end this isolation movement and get the nation united, and that's what happened on December 8th, the very next day. Millions flocked to the recruiting stations or joined factories and shipyards and worked 24/7 for the war effort.
Robert, do you think that's happening now? You know, the real war, of course, on terror, I mean, it's out there. But do you think some of this is also provoked in order to do whatever we have to do? Or are we talking about two different types of wars now?
Well, provocations have been with the United States since 1846, when President Polk provoked the Mexican War on the Rio Grande. U.S. troops were provoking the Mexican forces. And then Abraham Lincoln provoked the Southern forces at Fort Sumter. And most recently at the Gulf of Tonkin was used to provoke the attacks on the so-called attacks on American warships by the North Vietnamese. So you see, it's been used for many centuries.
Now, you served under George Bush, the first George Bush president. Tell me what it was like during those World War II years serving under him.
Yes, both of us were on the aircraft carrier USS San Jacinto, and we were in the Pacific. We were in photographic intelligence. He was the photo squadron commander, as well as a torpedo bomber pilot. I mean, he carried cameras in his plane and controlled it from his cockpit, and also had handheld cameras. And I flew with him at first when we first arrived in the Pacific, but since I could not shoot guns, I was not trained for that. Photographers were not allowed to go up unless you can shoot guns.
When he became president, what did you think?
Well, I had forgotten about our relationship that time. But then it soon dawned on me that this was
our same guy,
Bush, you know. And I did attend conventions with him with our ship and squadron.
And to this day, do you have an audience with him if you need it, Robert?
Oh, yes. We I talk with him or his chief of staff, all throughout the years.
Well, you served, 4 years in the Navy, sir. So, first of all, thank you for your service to our country. You know, it's about time that Americans, whether they agree with this war or not, or any war, at least remember the troops and the soldiers who go over there and risk their lives for the freedom that this country is based on.
Well, apparently, you know, the World War II is the, some people have said it was the last of the good wars. We were fighting for a cause that we all believed in.
But I'm not sure there is a good war anymore, Robert.
It doesn't seem to be, from certainly from Vietnam and the current one. It seems to have the animosity of a great portion of our public and the world public.
You did a great job with the book, Day of Deceit. How do people get this?
It's you can get it at all major bookstores and also on Amazon.com. On the internet.
Okay, very good. And once again, thanks for your service, Robert. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Robert Stinnett. Now-